Imagine having a technology so fast and so accurate you could deconstruct the genes involved in every cancer and then hit them with a designer cocktail of killer drugs. Well, it's happening. This is The Science Show on ABC Radio National. Hello, I'm Robin Williams, and that work from Cambridge in a minute. But it was in Cambridge that this man did the work that this week won him the Nobel Prize for Medicine. Back then, it was called test tube babies.
Now, in the early years, all my work was on human eggs matured in the dish. We collected bits of ovary. I found it very difficult to get pieces of ovary from gynaecologists in Britain. When I got in, I said I wanted to fertilise the eggs and transfer the embryos. They suddenly discovered they had an urgent meeting 100 miles away, you know, and disappeared like lightning, except about three. Now, one of them was Molly Rose, who delivered two of my children and worked at the Edgware General Hospital. And she sent me bits of ovary, which allowed us to do the timing. And she sent a piece of ovary in 1969, which allowed us to get 15 eggs out, mature them in vitro, and finding all the stages of human fertilisation. In one glorious evening in Cambridge, working at dead of night, we found all these stages. It was fantastic. Published in Nature in 1969. So by 1969, we knew all about ovulation, fertilisation, maturation. We were miles along the line. I cannot explain this to people clearly, because they think the birth of the Louise Brown was the biggest point. It wasn't. The total control of oocyte maturation in vitro, like clockwork, I got it. I knew where it was. I knew I'd have a store of eggs for fertilisation. And in 1969 is when we put two and two together, got the sperm right, because that was a tricky one, and got the penetration of the eggs and all the stages of fertilisation. Now, I must also tell you another thing. Before we fertilised those eggs in vitro, we had started making stem cells in 1964 in Glasgow, working on the rabbit. And we grew embryos in vitro and found that we could produce blood islands, nerves, connective tissue, muscle tissue, if we grew the embryos intact. If we cut out the inner cell mass, that's the embryo portion, and disaggregated cells and put them in singly, we got stem cells that would not stop dividing in vitro. They kept on dividing, 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 dividing. Broke all the rules of cell biology, because cells weren't supposed to do that. And it gave me the first thought of using stem cells for therapeutic purposes to cure human diseases. Does that sound mad?
Not anymore. Robert Edwards on the Health Report with Norman Swan 5 years ago. This week, Dr. Edwards won his Nobel Prize, but the Vatican isn't too pleased. Here with the other winners is Wendy Barnaby.
Carbon has been the big winner in the Physics and Chemistry Nobel Prizes. The Physics Prize has gone to two Russians at the University of Manchester, Andrei Geim and Kostya Novoselov. They've isolated a new material called graphene, a layer of carbon only one atom thick, or one atomic plane, as Andrei Geim expressed it to the BBC.
6-7 years ago, we stumbled on a material which is called graphene, which is one atomic plane of graphite. So we managed to isolate one atomic plane, and that essentially was the very beginning.
Because it's so thin, it's been very hard to take out of graphite, but Geim and Novoselov like to have fun experimenting, especially on Friday evenings. During one of these sessions, they pressed some sellotape to some graphite to see if they could strip off a thin layer, and it worked so well that it set them off on the trail of their new material.
Graphene and similar representatives of this new class of materials, they show amazing unique properties which we do not encounter in standard materials, and this is what the Nobel Prize for.
Unique it certainly is. Graphene is the world's thinnest material and pretty well transparent, but it's the strongest material ever measured, and it's a phenomenal conductor of heat and electricity. It could be used for a new generation of solar cells, LCD displays, and pollution sensors. This prize comes as British scientists are fighting to hang on to funds for curiosity-driven research. The president of the Royal Society, Britain's Academy of Science, is Lord Rees, and he's keen to point out the value of the laureate's basic research.
It's a fine example of academically motivated research. These guys had no idea what they were going to find, and they were given the freedom and the space to develop their ideas, and they used ingenuity rather than very elaborate equipment. When these two people were playing around with their sellotape and graphite, no one could have predicted the outcome, and what they have discovered is going to have immense technical applications, but they never foresaw that, and that was not their motive when they did it.
The Chemistry Prize was shared between three laureates: Richard F. Heck from the University of Delaware in the USA, Eiichi Negishi from Purdue University in the States, and Akira Suzuki from Hokkaido University in Japan. They've developed a tool which allows chemists to make carbon-based molecules as complex as those created by nature. As I heard from Professor of Organic Chemistry at the University of York, Ian Fairlamb.
They've been able to use a metal called palladium to transform simple organic compounds into more complex organic molecules, which can be used in important applications. You can see that the scope of their chemistry has been widely appreciated by many groups across the world.
So what does it enable chemists to do that they couldn't do before?
The most important thing to say is that we can access more complicated synthetic targets, and that really allows us to think of new applications. So we can think of new therapeutic compounds. You could think of sort of more intelligent materials. You can think about antibacterial compounds as well. So new structures that weren't accessible using traditional synthetic methods. The important breakthrough here is that we have more efficient synthetic technologies, or tools, we could call them tools, which enable us to make more structurally interesting compounds, pharmaceuticals, agrochemicals, antibacterials, advanced materials, and so on.
When Heck started work on the technique, his colleagues were very sceptical. At University College London, chemistry professor Jim Anderson remembers hearing about one of his early lectures.
When Heck was a young lecturer, he was having to use a large quantity of palladium to cross-couple two molecules together. And because palladium was so expensive, the audience and all the academics thought that this was never going to go anywhere. But the key discovery, or the key development that Heck, Negishi and Suzuki also accomplished, was managing to use catalytic quantities of metal, small quantities of palladium that would couple two molecules together again and again and again and again. And that's one of the reasons why there isn't much waste generated, because you just have a very small amount of metal of this precious palladium.
The Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences described the laureate's work as great art in a test tube. So, test tubes and sellotape, they still have a role to play in great science. This is Wendy Barnaby in London for The Science Show.
So be encouraged. The stuff in your shed could take you to Stockholm.